outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, by the time this airs, you and I are going to be running around Michigan together, huh?
That's right. I can't wait.
This is our first trip together on a live stream God Journey, kind of go hang out with people and see what happens kind of thing.
I hope we are travel compatible. I've got a good friend that talks about that, the travel compatibility, and I'm intrigued to see how that goes.
Yeah, me too. So this could be our last podcast is what you're saying. If things don't go well.
I'm hoping not. I'm hoping this is not, that this trip is not the end of our friendship.
What makes someone untravel compatible, do you know, or travel uncompatible?
Well, so we were talking about that a little bit, and there's people who are like good friends, but say you like to go more like with a basic plan, but have lots of flexibility in the plan. But the other person is like extremely detail oriented. Is like, if we defer from the plan at all, then I freak out and have a meltdown, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, yeah, since we're not doing that kind of thing, we're not really sightseeing or anything like that. I mean, we've had people over the years that we can vacation with, and it's really a vacation. And then you have other people you go on vacation with, but it's not a vacation. It's just
correct.
You're managing attitudes and impulses. And because Sarah and I want to get up and get to the day, and the other people that don't even get up till noon. And that just doesn't work for us because the day's half over by noon hit. So
yeah, but if they're staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning,
well, that's then we disregard that as stupid. So you can't vacation with stupid people. And I know you night owls now are going to be all offended, but yeah, if you're up till 2, you're not going on vacation with me. And you're definitely not staying in the same building I'm staying in. Partying till 2 a.m. Anyway, we're going to be in Michigan next weekend, so that'll be fun. We'll see how that goes.
We are.
And then I'm off to Alaska and then Virginia and Florida. So you want to check out the travel page, you can, if you're around those areas and want to hang out, let me know. We'll find a way to do it.
And then from there, Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
Outside of Colorado Springs.
Yeah, outside of ways. But yeah, for the 20s and 30s bunch, I got some people like 40-ish, 30, we sneak in on this thing. And it's hard. We've never done anything that's been limited by age. But
yeah,
I really feel like there's a reason God wants to bring some people together like that. And we've got a number of folks signing up already and probably more people interested than we can handle since they can only handle 25. But it's first come, first serve. So get your deposit in or whatever and come join us if you want. And we've also had people very generously from an older age group saying, hey, if somebody needs, here's some money to help some people go if they need a scholarship. So if you want to come and don't have money, that doesn't necessarily need to stop you.
Yes. And that's been the voice of several people that I've talked to as well that have said, please don't ever let finances deter somebody from being able to come. So know that those resources are out there and available for people.
That's great. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. Welcome back to it. Hey, I want to ask you a question. Have you watched much of this Chosen thing?
I haven't. I haven't watched a bunch of it.
I haven't either. I get emails probably every week, you know, about The Chosen and what do you think of The Chosen and have you seen The Chosen? And I stay in people's homes that are just like so excited. I think that's the way they do their Bible reading, you know, The Chosen. So they want me. And so I've seen parts of it.
Okay.
What little bit I've seen has looked interesting to me, but the reason I don't, one, I don't like the business model they've got behind it, but that, you know, the other reason is, which is kind of an app and you get it for free, but then you pay it for other people going forward, something. But the other reason is I'm too analytical about that stuff. I have a Jesus in my head when I read the Gospels. And when I watch somebody else's interpretation of those things, I don't relax and enjoy it. I'm constantly analyzing. Yeah, I think they got that right there. No, I don't think they got that right there. And so it's just not enjoyable for me to sit down and do that analytical work and then have to make a reasoned conclusive statement for people. Because if you enjoyed it or hated it, then I don't know what to say to people. But I did get this. I guess season 2 released a month or two ago, and I've got even more. Are you ever going to comment on The Chosen? So the answer to that, I guess we are. But we're not commenting from having watched it ourselves in a way that would make our opinion credible. So that's good.
Correct.
But I did get this from somebody. It said, utterly ruined The Chosen. That was the title of the email. It said, at the finale of season 2, they had Jesus rehearsing, planning his Sermon on the Mount, and Matthew transcribing and reflecting back to him, and actually putting up flyers in town to tell people he was going to preach. Up to that point, I had loved the character development and the normalcy of the players, though thought it was going to be really special, but they ruined it. But gosh, oof. If they got through two full seasons without bringing in the whole religious dynamic, that would have been pretty amazing to me.
Yeah.
But this just is, man, when you swim in that ocean, when it's all about planning and sermons, and it's not about just really out of a life who knows God, communicating the realities of God, that to me would seem so simple. But in our sermon dependent age, it needs to be studied and transcribed and reflected upon. And if you don't put flyers up, nobody's coming. That would have done me in. If I'd been watching it, I think then I might have had my yuck meter kind of blow up right out of my skull. But that's not the diss on the whole thing. Those of you that are enjoying it, if it's helping you connect with a more real Jesus, I think that's fabulous. But yeah, I think that part went too far. And that's the emails I'm getting now. Boy, they ruined this thing. God, they went to this thing.
I've heard some phenomenal stuff. In fact, I even... listen to an interview of the director who is leading the whole project.
Yeah.
And I've got a good friend that's actually in Reading that's helping, that is kind of overseeing, is the detail manager of the project. And I've heard some really interesting, great stuff about it. I'm going to have to go and watch it now, because now I need to, I've got too many people that are asking me about it as well. And saying, all right, what's your thoughts? What's your feedback on it? It's like, oh, geez, like, I don't know. I should probably take time to see this thing.
Yeah, when people just need my thoughts on something, I try to avoid it. If I happen to watch it as a normal part of my life, I will. But then I've got to, you know, like people send me a book, say, what do you think of this book? And I'm like, don't send me it, particularly if you're the author. If you don't, I'm going to give you my honest reflection on it, which isn't always a blessing to people.
Well, and me as the counselor, I like to know, especially if it's really impacting a large community of people, I want to see what the influence is. Like, what is drawing people to this? What's alluring people into this story? Like, what's catching people's attention? And so that's, especially, there's been some books that I've read that were really big in pop culture. And I was like, okay, my students are talking about this. My clients are talking about this. Like, how do I want to find out what it is that's drawing them into this and what is appealing to them so that I have some context.
Yeah.
So now it sounds like Chosen's falling into that category.
Oh, so you're going to have to watch it. I've got too many other things I'm trying to keep up with to try and take off something new at the moment. But you can let me know what you think. That'd be awesome.
I will. Maybe I'll download them for the flight to Michigan.
So best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
The best thing I heard actually wasn't verbal. I got to see it. I got to observe it. I got to observe a volleyball practice. I was a former volleyball coach, miss it. One of the school districts that I'm working in, the coach said, hey, just come and join us for a practice. So I went and joined and just watched. And there was a young athlete that had just gotten moved up to varsity. And it was so cool to watch this athlete just have such a joy and passion to be there that she got done with the drill. She went to go shake all of her hands. And there was one player that shook her hand. And yet she was intentional to go down the line to every single teammate, tap them on the shoulder and say, good job. You're doing a great job on the drill. I loved that. It was so encouraging to me to see, because she wasn't entitled. She didn't have this like, oh, I deserve to be here, or I've been here for a long time. It was, I'm just thrilled to be here and I'm loving the experience. And that was a joy to me to see today.
Were the other players kind of like, oh, crud, here's the new excited puppy on the team? And was there
a little bit of that.
Yep, shake their hands. So, yeah. Oh, great. I remember when Sarah got the counseling job a number of years ago, God, probably 20 now, but she was all gung-ho to be a counselor for high school kids. And she gets on a staff where all the people have been doing it for 30, 40 years, they're just waiting out retirement. And it didn't turn out that Sarah's excitement was such a blessing to people around her, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. That's tough. That would be a brutal environment to come into. What was the best thing you heard this week?
Yeah, best thing I heard, just one simple sentence, but I got to set it up a little bit. Book of Jonah.
Okay.
The question, why did Jonah disobey God? That's the question.
Hmm.
And a friend of mine posited a number of answers, and then the answer they got back was, he made it about himself.
Ooh.
And that phrase, I tell you, that just set up a tent in my mental space and has lived there ever since. I hear when stuff's going on, I feel like God's got me doing something, and I'm grousing about it. Like, I don't like where we're going here. It's like, don't make it about yourself. I'm going, oh my gosh, that changes so much. Because Jonah was supposed to go yell at the Ninevites, for God was going to level them. There was not even a repentance message in his thing. It was just, God's going to blast you. But Jonah was afraid that they would repent and God would forgive. And then either he would look like an idiot, or he didn't want the Ninevites to be redeemed, whatever. So he made it about himself. Even the plant at the end grows over and gives him shade. Then God takes it away and he's all upset. And you didn't grow the plant. It's not your plant. Why? And it's just, you made it about yourself. And oh my goodness, there is no obedience to Christ. There's no living deeply in him if we make it about ourselves.
Yeah.
That's one of those, I call them like nuclear bombs somebody leaves in your brain and that was in a dream. That conversation was in a dream of a friend.
Really?
Yeah. He made it about himself. And we were talking about that. It was interesting. In a conversation in which he had made something about himself that was destroying him. And he tells me the Jonah story. And then we're talking about some other stuff. And I'm just kind of looking at you going, I'm making this about myself. We just started laughing, going, don't we all? I mean, immediately we have a sense of where God may want us to go. How is this going to affect me? Do I like it? Do I not like it? And now we're down roads that are going to make it difficult for us to follow through, because it's about him. It's not about us. It's about him. And that is just, I feel like that's one of those phrases going to live with me a long, long time.
Man, I'm just thinking about right now, my family is kind of on a cliffhanger at the moment, specifically my mom and dad. They've invested a lot of time and a lot of money into their Angus herd. Mm-hmm. And so we run both beef cattle, and then we have a purebred black Angus herd.
You got to keep them apart, I imagine. The black Angus purebred herd.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yes, we definitely.
Fences are very important.
Two very different operations, two very different groups of cattle. And yet, so dad just felt, both mom and dad felt very much on their heart that they needed to lean down their operation, be more available, have more flexibility in their life to be able to give to grandkids, to be able to give to others, etc. And yet now the sale is tomorrow, and they've got a very large financial investment on the line. They have no idea who's going to show up. But God has just kept confirming to them, like, you need to do this for me. Hmm. And they're like, well, what if we lose all the money? What if nobody shows up? Like, what if 10 years worth of dedicated work goes out the window? And that question has come back of, don't make it about yourself. Do you trust me enough to allow me to lead you into a better space? Do you trust me enough? And oh my gosh, it's been interesting sitting and watching both my mom and dad wrestle through that and figure out how they're actually going to navigate that as the sale is imposing tomorrow.
So just of interest, do you auction off each cow itself, or lots of cows, or 100 cows in a shot, or how are they doing it?
So in this situation, normally you would do larger groups, right? Like in a normal traditional cattle auction, you'll sell anywhere from 3 to 50 all at one time.
Yeah.
Given this situation, it'll be individuals, every single cow will be sold individually because every single one has pretty significant value, whether they are a bull or a first calf heifer or an actually developed out cow.
And this is an in-person auction or online auction? They're both.
Both. It'll be both. Okay. So it'll be live streamed, but then there'll be people in person there as well.
So if you want to buy a cow, it's too late, because this is going to air after it's already been done. So,
That's true. So sorry, you've missed your opportunity to get into the purebred Angus herd.
I want to read some email to you, Kyle. And this is not email directed at the God Journey. One is, the rest of them are not. But people going through some stuff in their own life. And I find some of this so encouraging. And I think they'll be encouraging for other people who are going through very difficult things as well. This is from someone who wrote me about some real disappointments in their congregation because of some financial need they had, and they went to the body, quote unquote, to help them. And then, as usually happens, then there's all kinds of requirements to maintain this. And then if you have any kind of concerns or question about the congregation, you're belittled because of the need that you're in. So then you get marginalized. and said, and I just wrote back and said, you know, that's the problem of having the body as your provider and not God as your provider. That's kind of one of the things God's been doing in my life over 25 years is how to live with God's provision. And God may use brothers and sisters in his family to care for you. But if they become the people you're looking to as provider, then it will become a source of control. And so she wrote back and said, I am realizing yet again how so much of the religion we were raised with put the church in the place of God. Mm-hmm. And I love that statement. The thought process we had was that you must go to the deacons for financial help because that is always the means God uses to care for the poor and needy. Which there's an example of that in Acts, but an example is not a requirement or a proof text or the best way to go. He said, I'm often floored by how deeply the things we were taught as kids are deeply embedded in our thought processes. Another one is that we must always speak up when we have the truth. So when you said there is great freedom in not having to have the last word, that never occurred to me before because they were trying to convince the elders what they were doing was wrong. And what they're doing was wrong, but you know what? Once you try to explain what's true to people who don't believe what's true and aren't open to listening to a different input, then you really don't want to have the last word because you'll never get it. They'll always come back with something else. And so two great freedoms here, looking to God as provider, which I think that's always a good reminder for all of us. The first pastor I worked for, which he kind of shared it in a self-serving way, but don't ever look to the church to be your provider. You know, God will provide what you need and what he wants you to have, which was easy when they're not paying you much. It's a good excuse, but you know, it's still true. Sarah and I have always lived that way. And at times when things have been difficult or whatever, we've just looked to God and said, God, you're a provider. However, whenever, through whomever, however you want us to work, to build, to make tents, to whatever. And so learning not to have the last word. Somebody said that Dallas Willard, one of his later writings was, he'd post something online. I think I shared this on the podcast a while back, but then there was a lot of criticism and he didn't comment further. And someone asked him, why aren't you commenting? And he said, I'm learning the discipline of not always having to have the last word, which means you do let people walk away from you not knowing what you're really thinking. And sometimes oftentimes that's a good thing. If you've tried to share and there's no door open, then yeah, they are going to misunderstand you. And yes, they're going to make bad judgments against you, but you know what? You're not defined by them. And you don't have to have the last word because they're not listening anyway. And I love that. I love that 1 Peter 3 scripture in the Message. Jesus gets the last word on everyone and everything. He does, I don't have to. It's all going to sort out at the end. Then it says, we were taught to stay and fight no matter the cost because God requires that of us. How horrible is that? And I remember being taught some of this. When you have the truth, man, you just like a Rottweiler on a bone, man. You do not let go of that thing. And she goes on to say, how kind Christ is to show us how different he is from the religion we were pushed out of, because that's eventually what happened. I sense that he grieves with us the pain, but he patiently and lovingly holds us while he heals us so he can show us the true miracle of what he is doing in freeing our souls. I'm in tears as I write this, but thanks you for being a safe place to let the pain out and the healing begin. That's someone freshly coming out of a religious environment because of pain, not necessarily God's leading or desire, but coming outside of it now, they're discovering some of the wonderful truths that are so important if you're going to live loved, full, and free in this journey, if you're going to go down that road.
Man, I can just really appreciate what just the struggle that she's going through, you know, and as God continues to untangle some of those things in my life as well, you know, especially that having the last word, like I have such a hard time with that because I'm a communication person. I want people to understand me. So especially when I'm talking to somebody, I will come at it from multiple different angles and paint whatever picture I need to paint so that I really feel like they get the picture. And when you just said that, like walking away with them not knowing what's on your mind or like them not, you know, not it, there was something inside of me that's like, ooh, I don't know if I can do that. I don't like that, Wayne. Like there's literally like a response inside of me of like, ooh, I might need to take a look at that. you know, I want to lay it out there. I want them to know. I want them to be able to understand and to grasp it. But you're right. When there are those people who you try to do that, but their heart is not in a space to be able to hear it, then it's that casting pearls before swine, right? Where you're throwing out, you're trying to gift this beautiful thing to this person, but they're just not in that space where they're able to receive it. They can't hear it yet.
Yeah. And if someone doesn't love you enough to hear you out, even if they disagree, then that's not a friendship. It's just not. I've got people like that in my life that to be involved with that group of people, you have to conform to their expectations of you and conform to the environment that they've established. But if it's not your environment, if it's, no, I'm not playing this game, then yeah, you've got to walk away, be misunderstood, be judged. And you know what? Someday this all washes out with Jesus. It doesn't have to wash out with me. And we don't have an obligation, particularly in systems. Just right after I'd read that email, I saw one of these. The breath of fresh air is, you know, a live stream we send out 3 days a week, some kind of quote from something I've done in the past. And I'm not doing that. Other people are doing that. I don't select when they go out. I don't even select the quotes. I'm just letting other people who have a real vision to keep some of the things we've said and spoken of here, just refreshing them to people's hearts. And a lot of people subscribe to it. A lot of people get really touched by it. The one that came out shortly after I read this one is, people who stay in a system to try and change it are more often changed by that system than they are an influence of change. The problem with an organization is it has to conform people in order to survive. And that was from a podcast back in 2017 called Can This System Work? And to me, I see that because I've had some conversations with people just saying, you know, if I stay in here, man, maybe some things will really change. I'm going, yep, been there. Yep, tried that. Yep, not often. Because there's a business model, and particularly if you have to say, if what the change I'm asking for, if it alters the business model, the underlying, which most people aren't thinking about consciously, but believe me, leaders are. If we don't do these things this way, certain people leave that will make it difficult for us to continue. And that's the business model. And if you challenge that, even not directly, but just, hey, you know, we ought to stop having Sunday morning services, get together in our homes. People are going, there's no offering, there's no money, there's no, that's what some people are thinking who carry that responsibility. So I love that idea. You just can't change it.
See, and I really wrestle with that, Wayne, because when I hear you say that, I've experienced that to be true, specifically in, you know, religious organizations that I've been a part of. Some have been phenomenal and others have been, let's just say, very hostile towards suggestions or potential that would move them away from their dollar line. But now I'm in public education and I see a lot of things in that regard that I'm like, Lord, this needs to be changed. Like, this is destroying young people's lives, but it's so much about the dollar. And I don't know what to do with that. Like, and so then it's like, okay, Lord, what do I do with that? Like, if this system is harming the people that it's in, and yet I can't change it, do I need to remain in this system and just continue to be an impact in those individuals' lives and not try to change the system? Or do I continue to fight against the system? Like, what do I do? And that's a tough one. That's really hard.
It is a tough one, which is why you need the Holy Spirit speaking into our hearts. Why we need to hold things before God and say, where am I most effective here? Is it trying to change this for the good of a lot of people coming behind? Then great. If it's no, it's immutable. So be there for the blessing of others, for to be an inspiration to others who are caught in that. And then that's a worthy goal as well. Staying there, not necessarily change the system, but to love people that are mired in it, that can be valuable too. I listen to the podcast, the news podcast, those too. They always talk about the immutable law of bureaucracy, which is almost every bureaucracy starts with a good goal, a passionate people that want to genuinely help solve a problem. And yet the immutable law of a bureaucracy is it will eventually become a group of people more concerned with protecting their program than it is actually helping the people the program was designed to help.
Yeah.
And you see that so much. And our culture, government takes on a good problem. Let's take it on. Here's some ideas. Let's try and do this. And then eventually it's not about the Veterans Administration. It's not about the veterans. It's about the doctors and the administrators and all that. And you go right down a whole list of even wonderful aims. And eventually it's about protecting the bureaucracy. It's why you cannot get people dismissed from a government job, even if they're incompetent, or even if they're found to be not doing it in a judicious way, or not genuinely serving people. The unions protect all that. And it's just the immutable law of a bureaucracy. And it's sad and cynical to come to that conclusion. But man, I'm at that conclusion. I just don't think you change bureaucracies once they become about protecting themselves. And talk about the growth of administration in colleges and universities. Ratio of administrators to teachers in the last 30 years accounts for why college costs so much when the education isn't any better. Because it's not invested education, it's invested administrators who get paid high salaries to sit around and push diversity memorandum and rules and statistics. And it's really sad that we can't seem to get people involved in bureaucracy that really care about the need and not care about their own well-being.
But do you think that they would, even if they go in with the genuine care to change and to impact a need, do you think the bureaucracy even allows them an inch to be able to do that?
I would love to hear stories, because the stories I hear is no, they do not. It becomes hardened over time. In the beginning stages, yeah. And do some church systems have enough desire for revival, renewal, to risk something, to become something better? I do hear those stories, but very rarely and not very often.
Yeah.
Because most people, like, as we talked about a few weeks ago, like to protect their comfort zone. And this is my comfort zone. I like what it is on Sunday morning. I don't care if it's not the most effective thing in the world. It comforts my wayward soul, and it puts my kids over there so they're cared for. And yeah, that's hard to beat. And then there's this one from someone, same kind of thing. And I love stories of people struggling to truth when it's not easy. So there's a way to know him and be held by him when circumstances are painful. I thought after all I've endured, it seems time to have a break, or in other words, for him to fix it. Seems that to turn to Jesus relationally means to let him walk with me rather than him fixing my things. Mm. I love that, because I grew up with a Jesus that wants to fix everything for you, but then he doesn't.
Yeah.
So you go, okay, so either Jesus is a real flake at what he does, or that's not what he does.
Yeah.
And they're freshly coming to that. I just want him to fix everything. And it seems that walking with him, it's not about fixing things. It's about him working inside us. Says, I know these things, how to let him control the timing, but my heart cannot yet find rest there. That's a wonderfully admitted statement. I'm finding it so hard to live with that tension in wrestling with him so that he can provide the answers. I feel very vulnerable. Another thing I don't like. And if I ask him to continue teaching me rather than my impulse to provide for myself, wow, what freedom. In your last podcast, you talked with Kyle about how so many of us seek comfort in our circumstances rather than let this relationship with Jesus be the largest part of our comfort. Feels like I'm at a cliff's edge, and if he doesn't come through, I'm not going to make it. Now, that's where I want to be a cheerleader for people, right there, because I think that's the hardest thing. I'm often at that point. I'm going, okay, I've invested my heart in following the things God's leading me in, and now I'm down a road that if Jesus doesn't come through, I'm going to be lost again. And yet he never leaves me lost. He always has a way, but his way to the rational mind rarely looks like the best way.
Yeah.
So when you're down that road going, okay, Jesus, if you don't come through here, I'm going to get really stuck and I'm going to get lost. And I have those feelings. I think other people do. And that's when a friend needs to come by and just sit down with them on the rock and saying, we'll get through this. He will get you through. He's really good at this. So let's do it. Let's keep on.
But I think what you pointed out earlier, though, about the statement of maybe if he isn't fixing things, maybe that's not what he does. That's intriguing, right? Because if God isn't just the mighty mechanic that's fixing and solving all of our problems and getting bailing us out of all the issues that we find ourselves in, man, that's, at least in the training and the description of God that I had growing up, that's very disruptive. Because then it's like, well, that's what he does, right? Like, he steps in and he solves our problems and he rescues us. And yes, there's lots of scriptures about him being a rescuer or a great comforter. And yet, it looks, like you said, it looks very different in a lot of those ways. Like, to be on that cliff's edge, to say, Lord, you've got to come through, or I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to. And yet, giving him permission to come through in his way, not in our prescribed image of like, no, this is what it looks like for you to come through, Lord. Instead of having enough trust in his character and relationship with him to say, Lord, how are we going to get through this? What does this look like? Because I know you're standing right here with me in this. So what does it look like? Because I have no idea, Lord, but I know you're right here in the midst of me, in the midst of this with me.
We end up like Peter, don't we? After Jesus fed the 5,000, they chase him around the lake, and he says, you're really just after free food. You're really not after me. You just got food you didn't work for. And then they all leave him. And he looks to the disciples and says, you guys going to leave too? And Peter just says, I have nowhere else to go. I love that statement. When you're down this road, like when you realize, hey, my attempts to control things are not working anyway.
Yeah.
Now you've got really no place to go back to. So what am I going to do at the cliff's edge? Am I just going to go back and fix myself now? Because that hasn't worked. Am I going to go back and try and get Jesus to fix things the way I want them? That hasn't worked. And so we end up like Peter. And I think maybe this is where faith really gains some traction in our hearts. We're saying, I got nowhere else to go, man. Here I am. I'm going to trust you to work these things out in me, even in the midst of pain. And I think that's one of the things you've got to realize is, pain is not the Antichrist. Pain doesn't prove Jesus has left us. In fact, it's through much suffering or trouble, Paul and Barnabas encourage the churches as they're going through, that we enter the kingdom of God. It's not in bliss and joy and comfort. That's not where we enter. And it doesn't mean that God creates suffering for us as tests. I don't believe any of that kind of stuff. But the world we live in is so cross-cultural to the life of Jesus that following him leads to suffering. It leads to, oh my gosh, this hurts. Yes, but this is healing. It's the hurt of a surgeon, not the hurt of a mugger that's beating the tar out of you in the middle of the street. It's a surgeon that's bringing you into life, and embracing that journey and being able not to retake control is so important for this person, so important in my life, so important for all of us to say, man, I got to stay in that space. And I've got to find people around me to encourage me. That's what helps me so much. When I'm at a point of just going, I don't know if I can keep doing this, I've got 20, 30 people I can call and just say, hey, let me tell you what I'm going through. Am I missing something here? Because if I am, I want to know that. But if I'm not missing something, people say, you know what? You're on the right course. And now you're just going to have to trust Jesus to do what Jesus does. And it's more about shaping me than it is about fixing the circumstance I want fixed.
Going back to what C.S. Lewis said about being undone by the encounter that he had with the heart of Christ, right? With the love of Christ. Because, I mean, I think back on my life, and when I had this experience, and I've had these experiences with him where it's literally undone me. I don't know any other way to do life. But like Peter said, you know, like, I have nowhere else to go. It's like, and it's not a, that's not a fatalistic, like, oh, I have nowhere else to go. It's, I've tasted life here. I know the life that I've experienced here is the life that I want to live. Now, is there pain, suffering, unknown that's ahead of me? Yes, but I know that you are the source of life, and I know that you're the source of love. Like, what I have experienced through you has ruined me for anything else. So I don't know where we're going from here, Lord, but I don't have anywhere else to go because you've ruined me for anything else.
And maybe the hardest rescue is the first rescue from the cliff's edge.
Yes.
You know, if you've been here before, it's easy to go, yeah, he comes through. This is what it means to follow him, and I'm okay. But if you've never been there before, when you're finally giving up all your attempts to fix things, all your attempt to control things, it really looks like the end of the world. I get it, which is why I want to be in people's lives at that moment. When you're on the cliff's edge, and I don't mean the old faith is jumping off the cliff and hoping Jesus is out there. I don't believe that stuff, because that's a lot of presumptive stuff. But when God has led you, and when your eyes are opening the fact that I can't fix this, and yes, I feel vulnerable and I don't like it, but feeling vulnerable is where the kingdom has access to our hearts. when it feels out of control is where the kingdom has access to our hearts. When it feels like it's uncertain, that's where the kingdom has access to our hearts. That's why Jesus says, or Paul said, through much suffering, we enter the kingdom. It puts us in that place to let Jesus have the last word.
Yeah.
Instead of, no, I'm going to have a dadgum and I just don't like it this way. I want my life to be different. And boy, any of us who've been on this journey have screamed at God 1,000 times like that.
Oh, yeah.
I have.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't a lot lately, but man, because I've been on the cliff's edge enough to go, yeah, I'm just comfortable right here with him until whatever he's about is going to happen. One more thing she says at the end that I thought was interesting. I'm living more and more engaging people who cross my path, but I'm struggling with how to love my family who constantly come with a performance agenda. Mm. Seeing Jesus break through at those moments. So it comes back to listening for his nudges. Wayne, I am hungry to see this self-consciousness drop further away. Feel fear as the dissonance, but religion and life in my in him becomes more pronounced in how to navigate this without being cut off from family. Anybody who's been on a journey, particularly if you've grown up in a very religiously performance-based family, and then you go on a bit of a different journey that gains their disdain. It may be just their disapproval in the beginning, and eventually it's their disdain because you're not doing it the way they're doing it. And one thing you got to realize is people who are mired in the suffering of religious performance crave company. If they have to be there, they want everyone else to live there. They want their siblings, their children, their parents. And religious performance people are definitely obnoxious people because they've got to put that, if they're paying it, you've got to pay it too. And so when she's saying, how do I maintain this journey and not get cut off from my family who are more religious performance oriented? And the answer to that is that's not your choice.
Yeah.
And I know people think, well, God, I don't want it to be my choice. Sometimes families cut you off because you won't conform to their dysfunctional ways of doing what they do. And it may be about Jesus. It may be a family that does a lot of triangulating around a certain person that, you know, they control how everybody responds to everybody else, what rumors are believed and what lies are told. And then if when you exit that, when you say, you know what, I'm not playing that game anymore. And so I'm not, other people are running me down, but I'm not jumping in there to defend me. Your family will cut you off and they'll blame you for it. They'll blame, well, you don't love enough. You don't care enough. And they'll never say, you know, maybe the way we're doing life is a pretty disgusting. So I always tell people, whether it's, you know, they want to leave a religious system, but they don't want to hurt anybody. And I'm just going, that's not up to you.
Yeah.
Because whether people get hurt or not, it's kind of their deal. If there's no graceful way to leave, then doesn't mean you're just stuck there. Same thing with a family. I know those of us who've grown up in families we care deeply about, man, you'll do anything to not lose that engagement with and involvement and participation and acceptance of family. You want that more than anything. You want your parents to love you. You want your siblings to have a neat relationship. But when that's not possible anymore, it's not on you to step back and say, yeah, I can't participate there with you. And it's not Jesus saying, oh, reconciliation at any cost. He was the one that talked about, you know what? Sometimes you got to hate father and mother, brothers and sisters. If you're not willing to follow me, even if it costs your family, to the one guy who wanted to follow me, he said, let the dead bury the dead. Mm-hmm. You come follow me. I mean, I've always hated that language. That's just brutal. What do you mean let the dead? Just let him get through the funeral with his father, for Pete's sake. But Jesus knows that sometimes family is the greatest distraction to his invitation into life. And it doesn't mean be cavalier about family. It doesn't mean just dismiss them easily. It means do whatever you can do to love and be kind and to reconcile. But there are environments created in which that's just impossible. And when it's impossible, then you've got lots of encouragement there too, saying if you have to sell your soul to be part of the family,
yeah,
then part of the family isn't worth it. Now, most families are never going to ask for that. It's never going to come up. It just, you know, people want to manipulate your responses. And when you kind of say, you know what, hope you can be okay with me exploring a bit of a different journey. And if they're not okay with you exploring it, you don't have to conform your journey to their expectations. Just don't.
Well, and I think sometimes too, at least for me anyway, God had to draw me out of my family system for a period of time and let me live in his love before I was able and had a heart space to be able to go back into my family system. Because there was a lot of dysfunction that was there. There was a lot of challenges that were there. And I needed some time away and disconnected for God to really, A, introduce me to his love, and then B, kind of build that relational foundation before. And eventually he did draw me back into some reconciliation with my family in some really cool ways. But that took several years, some intense counseling, and God doing a lot of stuff in my life before I was ready to step back into that space and start to say, okay, is there reconciliation to be found here? Can I re-engage with my family system in a way that's more in a healthy and whole and life-giving way or not? And what would that look like?
And that doesn't always depend on you, right?
Correct.
I think when that can happen, that's awesome. When you find the freedom to be in a dysfunctional environment and not be influenced by it, and instead be an influencer of people, not necessarily the system, but just loving people in the midst of it, I think that's a great freedom. But if the system doesn't allow you to.
Correct.
Then there's nothing on you that says, yeah, I can make this happen, because you can't.
Yeah, because that somebody else made that choice, and yep. you respond and you live out of the love and the space that you feel like God's leading you to. But if somebody slams the door, trying to pry it open or blast it open or make a way for you to get yourself back in there, it just, not only are you going to feel more wounded, but they're going to load up with more ammo that they're going to use against you to try to get you back in line and get you back into the system.
Friendship is always offered, right? It can't ever be forced.
Yeah.
So I love that if we get a place of freedom, say, hey, I'm willing to forgive all the garbage that's going on. I'm willing to start anew and keep a heart open for that. That's powerful. If people are going to continue to make your life living hell, if you don't conform to what they think you should be or should do in that family, then it is absolutely A-okay with Jesus and everybody else for you to step out and find people around you. I think all of this says, well, you need people around you who help you think in this space. And I know people go, oh, I got to find a group or a house church like this. No, that's not necessarily where you're going to find it. You're going to find it first in relationships. Like I said, I've got 20, 30, 40 people I could call on any given day to say, hey, can I process something with you?
Yeah.
Who I think there's two things about. One, they love me enough to listen, number one. But two, they love me enough to be honest. So yeah. I'm not calling people who are just going to say, oh, Wayne, of course you're right. You're always right. No, I want to call people who have actually said to me at times, I think you're missing it here. Oh, really? Well, tell me how I'm missing it. And sometimes it takes me a month to see what they're saying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you're missing it, you don't think you're missing it or you wouldn't be missing it.
Correct.
So when somebody says, I think you're missing it, our first response is, well, of course not. No, Jesus led me here. But if you listen, and you need that inside relationships to be on a journey like this. You need people that have been to the cliff's edge and know that Jesus is who he says he is. And he will get you through this, not necessarily to the outcomes you want. That's not it, but to the inner freedom and letting his glory shine through the broken places of your life, which is a fabulous thing for God to be part of that with us. And in the circumstances, well, you know what? They're going to get fixed in the next stage.
Yeah.
That's where our hope is. It's not we're going to get everything the way we like it here. I think particularly in these days of growing struggle and torment and trouble, not going to be so much here, but it's going to be in the life to come. Mm. Maranatha. Jesus, come quickly.
Yeah.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.